morning. You're very welcome to episode 3 of Ours Protect with me, John Morley, here on Galway Bay FM for Thursday, the 31st of July, with you for the next half hour or so. Coming up on the programme today, we'll be looking at green transport with Kevin Jennings from the Galway Cycling Campaign and Brendan Mulligan from the Glewis Campaign. We'll also hear from the children of Lackey National School and Briar Hill National School and the teenagers of St. Charlotte's College in Tuam. All that and a lot more coming up on episode 3 of Ours to Protect. You're very welcome to Ours Protect with me, John Morley. The topic this week is green transport. I went out to Briar Hill National School to ask the children what they understood about green transport.
Some examples of green transport solutions are cycling, walking, running, and taking the bus and going to the metro and using the train.
By cycling, you're not using any diesel or petrol, but if you're driving a car, all the diesel could come out and all the smoke will go up in the air and hurt the environment.
We should invest in green transport solutions so more people get electric cars or hybrids and use the bus.
Time now to hear from the pupils of St. Charlotte's College in Tuam.
And we will reduce the CO2 emission in the atmosphere.
We can make green transport more accessible to everyone by producing more electric vehicles and bikes and making them cheaper and making more like forest trails.
Now let's move on to cycling. I spoke to Kevin Jennings from the Galway Cycling Campaign. He tells us all about the benefits of cycling for the environment.
Thanks very much, John, and for the chance to talk. So the cycling campaign has been going on for about 25 years. My own involvement stretches over the past 6 years or so. And the cycling campaign has always advocated for safer Galway for people to get around on foot or on bike. And my own interest in this was piqued. We bought a house maybe 10 years ago and I thought I was sorted. I have a cycle lane pretty much outside my door on the Western Distributor Road to my place of work. But then children came along and I realised that the experience on a bike is very different. The needs of the infrastructure is very different from the perception of a parent with a child on the bike or now that the children are on their own, even to cycle around or to walk around. And I have a child who's 13 and I'm very reluctant to let him cycle around the city. He does it a bit, but mainly I try to put him on the bus or to walk around. And I kind of wish things were different. So the cycling campaign is a group of like-minded people of various different interests, but sort of working hard to try to get the message across that the way we move around could be very different in the city. And I suppose at the base of everything is the idea of universal accessibility, that if it's safe for my mother to get around, if it's safe for my 7-year-old daughter to get around, then it's probably safe and comfortable for me to get around as well. And to put these sort of people first, rather than people like me, I suppose, middle-aged men who cycle from home to work to the gym or whatever our life is, it's more nuanced than that. And yeah, so that's what the cycling campaign is advocating for with mixed success.
And you cycled into us here today. What sort of challenges do you face on the road as a cyclist personally?
Personally, well, I'm fairly comfortable on the bike, but even still, I had to come by the roundabout at the hospital. And so I'm on a cycle track there. The option, I suppose, is to get off the cycle track, walk across the road and resume the cycle track there, heading towards the university. But I didn't. I slipped into the bus lane and I'm fast enough on the bike. I'd keep up with cars or whatever. And I took the roundabout like a vehicle, the way they're designed for. So our roundabouts are designed for people to pretend you're a car, behave like a car, take the space and go through it. And if you're confident, you're not afraid of a beep or you're quick enough to get away and your value of your life is little, I don't know what it is, but you'll take that on. But when you have children on the back of the bike, you won't do that. Not a chance. And there's a lot of people who won't do this. So the infrastructure fails in that sense. And then on the other end of the cycle in here, it was actually a very beautiful end to the cycle in that after I come out at Dunn's there, so I did dismount and cross the road at the pedestrian crossings there just after Dún na Cathairibh, and I meandered in through Terryland Forest Park, which leads you right to your doorstep here. And that's a beautiful little slow cycle. You can't go fast. You shouldn't be going fast. You're cycling through nature. It might be different at nighttime, but during the daytime there, that's a lovely, peaceful kind of a cycling experience. So that's just today's trip, John. But generally speaking, designing for cycling, if you just take me and my interests, you won't end up with infrastructure that actually shifts most people and most of their trips. Because most of the time when I'm going somewhere, I have the children with me. In fact, I spend all my life pretty much as a taxi driver bringing them to the sports and things. And that's a real pity because most of their sporting events are in the city. They should be well able to go on their own. It'd free up my time to do coaching or to have me time or spend time with my partner and things like that. Or the children just should have their own independence to get around, but they won't let them out. And it's not stranger danger. It's actually the fear of my neighbours knocking them off their bikes or hitting them when they're crossing the road.
Mm. In terms of making the city more accessible for cyclists, there's a few benefits to that. One of them is sustainability and reducing emissions on the road.
Yeah, so the benefits of cycling, and many of us, John, I don't know where you go on your own holidays, but you know, if you've ever been lucky enough to go to Belgium or somewhere like that, the cities like Ghent, I believe Paris is like this. I was there 3 years ago. But cities in Europe, frequently you're in the middle. Of course, you're on holiday, so the experience is different to actually living day to day. But they're quiet. You can hear each other talking. You can walk around. You don't have the child in a death grip. So frequently in Galway City, unless you're on the kind of main pedestrianised areas or in the university or on the prom, the kind of great active travel parts of the city, you're holding the child very tightly. I mean, it's only a short time in your life, or your dog or whatever. You know, you're holding them tight so they don't run in front of a vehicle. But in European cities, things tend to be designed differently, where you can walk around. The shops are busy, so business doesn't implode. They manage things like waste. They have big underground waste receptacles. They manage things like deliveries, where you're not in conflict. Like if you go Shop Street in the morning, if you're going to school, it's just three lanes of traffic sometimes, you know, between the deliveries. But the noise would be one thing. The air pollution is another big thing when you restrict vehicles to the city centre. So one thing with air pollution is that exhausts are pretty much where people are. So when you talk about air pollution, okay, if you're talking about the CO2 emissions, maybe fires are worse, maybe burning turf is worse. But that's not really the conversation. The exhausts are here where we are walking, where we are living. And in particular, car exhaust, if you have a car idling outside the school, that's exactly at the height of children breathing in. So one of my friends suggested to me a great experiment would be to put a purple dye in the exhaust so people could actually see how much of this stuff is around us in the air. Of course, the exhausts are invisible. So one of the benefits would be cleaner air. One is quieter kind of a city, but also there's health benefits in it. Now, I mightn't be a model of health myself, but I'd be a lot worse with the lifestyle I live. If I weren't cycling, it kind of keeps the doctor away a little bit for me, and I'm grateful for that. But there's a healthy aspect in the sense that when I lock my bike, be it at my workplace or wherever I'm going, often you meet somebody. So there's a human scale thing there, and you're in touch with someone. And if you don't get on with them, you can nod at them and say hello. But often you actually get a few conversations, and it's very useful in terms of community building. And you'll find things like campaigning groups that are around cycling are quite effective in some sense, that they punch a little bit above their weight. Now, they mightn't necessarily be strategic. They need a few more politicians involved in terms of changing behaviour. But there is this interpersonal aspect that you get from human-scale transport. And there's also a very handy thing with a bike, especially if it's a well-racked-up bike, not a sports bike, but a bike with bags on it and baskets on it and things like this, where you can pop into a shop. Now, it's not quite France where you'd pop into your grocers or something like that, but shops like Ernie's and stuff like that, you know, where you can pop in. You're not going to do the weekly shopping there, but you get a whole load of interesting stuff there on the bike, throw it into the basket quickly, say hello and move on. And I suppose it facilitates a different kind of a city. And Galway was kind of designed at that, the city centre. It's at a very human scale of a city. And that's the problem. If we try to stick in big, wide buses and things like that, they don't necessarily fit. So the other advantage, I suppose, with the cycling, not only for the health benefits, personal and in some sense societal too, would be the idea that, for a lot of people, okay, a lot of people can't afford to cycle, or they can't cycle, they mightn't have the health to cycle, but there's a lot of people can't drive. In fact, there's more people statistically who can cycle than who can drive. So you have young people who'd be the main one. So my children are going to be teenagers soon. I'm thinking of them in particular, but there's also young people, students and stuff. We have two universities in the city where people just can't afford a car. And also, a car is very expensive, especially when you're a young person like yourself. Your insurance is probably, it's very high. This is a real expense, which means you have to give up other parts of your life, a young person's life, to work to fund a car. And often these cars are not necessary. I know for some people they are necessary, but they're not necessary all the time. And rental cars, go cars, there's a different model of organising things, but it takes societal buy-in to sort of transform how we think about this. And also the storage of a car is a big problem within the city. The space could be used an awful lot better. And I take driving holidays, so I'm far from anti-car. I mean, I go driving on my holidays. I cycle, you know, for day to day. But I drove to Rotterdam there last summer, and I remember driving right into the city centre, and the car is buried underneath in this underground car park. And the underground car park was an attraction in itself. And then there was this beautiful market up above it. And it was so easily done on such a small footprint of land. And once you're up on street level, you don't see cars. There are bikes going around, there are people walking, But it's thriving. It really is thriving. And apparently it was a regeneration project. And, you know, the land can be used differently, but it needs a lot of buy-in, and it needs people to sort of come together and say, this is the vision we want, and have everyone work for it. Because things can fall apart here. There's one strip of land, nobody knows who owns it. Could go back to feuding family or something like that, and it becomes a delicate matter or something. And the common good, if you start talking like that, you can get dismissed as a communist or something. And once politics get into it, the whole thing falls apart. Usually what's being spoken about here is kind of common sense. Teenage children in a wide radius of Galway should be able to cycle to their beach, be it Ballylochan, be it the prom. And people from outside the city should be able to hop on a train or a bike or something safely. And their parents will know that the buses will come, that they'll be on time, that their children will be safe, whatever their gender is, that they'll be able to be looked out for. And yeah, all of these things do require a little bit of buy-in, and that's very slow to happen at the moment. So it's not just a health in terms of the obvious things like the air pollution, the noise pollution, but it's actually this kind of freedom that it gives people and gives society.
And in terms of, you mentioned the active travel and where it's working in some parts of the city, where do you see as an opportunity or where those challenges that could be fixed?
There are challenges, but there are opportunities everywhere. Now, of course, there's not much happening here in Galway. We're very frustrated. It takes a long time to build projects. And, you know, there's big projects like, you know, the second ring road is the obvious elephant in the room. You know, that's 30 years into planning or something, and I don't think a sod has been turned on it. But even simple things like bike lanes haven't been happening. Now, it's great to finally see some progress, let's say, out in Ballyban and Juishka. But from a cycle campaigning point of view, and Bohir Stefan is about to start, but these are not the most urgent places where you need cycle lanes. These are already wide roads, give and take, you know, and the cycle lanes will improve them, don't get me wrong, but these aren't the dangerous roundabouts. These aren't the junctions, let's say, on my route, where I have that Dean roundabout at Fort Lorenzo. I have that awful junction there at the top of Threadneedle Road, and I have a junction, let's say, between Kingston Road and Clybourne Road to navigate. And my children can't get from where we live to their destinations, to their clubs and things, without passing through these junctions. So there's streets around that are well known as danger spots, and there's very little appetite to take those on. Sorry, you asked me for positive suggestions, so let me see. What can I say? I mean, there is this Galway Transport Strategy plan, but again, the priorities in that, God, I'm moaning again. Let me see. Where are the opportunities? There's so many opportunities. We're blessed. We have canals, we have waterways, so rivers, we have seafront. So the key thing with banana bike is you don't want junctions. The same thing in a car. You don't want junctions. You want free flow. But on a bike in particular, you don't want junctions. You don't want to have to... Junctions where you have conflict, that's where you can have an accident, and that's where things happen. So coasts are absolutely perfect, or rivers are things, because they tend not to have junctions. You only have junctions where you have bridges. So all of our coastal line is an obvious opportunity. It'll require some political will, but then they'll give you the spines of the thing. The second big thing, which is often overlooked, is it's not about bike lanes, but about bike-friendly streets. So calm streets, quiet streets. So there's pedestrianisation on at the moment out west. I don't know if you're out there much, but out west, if you're out there in the evening, there's people out kind of using the street for dining, I suppose, and drinking and things like that. But it could be used, I suppose, better, all that street space. It's not the easiest place to cycle around because there's people out there using it. They're flocked with people anytime I'm there. But these quiet streets where you don't have threats from bigger vehicles make for very pleasant cycling. So the real solution to a city like Galway, the city centre, is not to have cycle lanes as such, but to have less traffic, less true traffic. And that means kind of blocking off roads, I'll be straight, a line of bollards so that cars have to take a detour. You can still access where you need to go. If you're dependent on your car as your mobility aid, you can still access, but very slowly, where you need to go, where you need to go from. But you might have to take a circuitous route. So that'll guide traffic to use the N6, to use the ring road to go around the city. But what it'll do also is it'll make walking or cycling a shortcut, a deliberate shortcut. And these are the kind of measures, because you won't fit in cycle lanes on these narrow streets, and they wouldn't fit anyway. These are streets that have to be shared, but unfortunately you're not sharing. You're sharing, it's lambs and wolves in the sharing there, and it just won't work out. It doesn't work out in other places. But all of these things have been done. You remove the dangers, and then other things can thrive.
You mentioned the ring road as well. The Galway Transport Strategy is on pause because of that. Going forward and planning that strategy, do we need to link everything up, whether that be cycle lanes, the train stations, if there's going to be a Gluas, park and rides, does it all have to come together cohesively?
Certainly, anything should come together. There's too much siloed thinking here, which is a problem. But again, I mean, if we're talking about our environment, the political environment is one aspect of it. You know, environment isn't just the trees and the flowers and the wildflowers and things. That's usually very surface level, that environment where the trees grow. Underneath, there's a whole world of sewers and things upon which everything works. And, you know, the natural aspect of it is only part of it, but our cultural environment, our well-being is so important, and that's reflected in our politics. And we have this siloed kind of politics and planning, which doesn't serve us well up until now. People seem to maybe have a pet project and they're going to go ahead with it. They've the horns down and this gets them through it. Do we need joined up thinking? Yes, absolutely. Are there things that can be done independently of any ring road or big project? Yes. And this is what's missing, this will to do very simple interventions. It might just be knocking a wall between two housing estates. So, yes, joined up thinking is hugely important. The idea of shared experiences, the idea that things would be designed with a visually impaired person in a wheelchair in mind. How did they get from A to B first? Plot those routes out through the city. After that, how do people walk pushing a buggy? How would people cycle around? And what you'll find is everything will fall into place and then the cars will come afterwards. So cars will still fit in. There'll be loads of space left over. But that you'd put, I'd say, the most vulnerable as a priority, design for them. And don't say, oh, you walk up to here, then you're on your own for 50 metres and then it's beautiful again, which is the way it's done at the moment because things aren't joined up.
Mm. Kevin Jennings, member of the Galway Cycling Campaign. Thanks for joining us on Ours to Protect.
Thanks so much, John. Yeah.
Time now to hear from the children of Lacka National School.
It's important for the environment, so because all the gas and the cars and stuff, it goes up into the air, so we're kind of better to have electric stuff so it doesn't do anything bad to our environment.
Can you tell me some examples of some green transport solutions?
Bicycles, scooters, maybe like electric cars.
And do you use any green transport?
Sometimes I might ride my bike to the shop or take the bus.
Yes, I would ride my bike to my granny's house sometimes, and I would get the bus into Galway City. Yeah, we use the bus a lot and our bikes.
No, not really. Just maybe the bus the odd time.
It can be hard in rural areas, can it?
Yeah, like there's no buses going from our road, so it's harder to get to a bus or a train or something.
I cycle to the shop to get some food, or I walk to the shop.
How can we make green transport accessible to everyone?
Maybe make more bus stops and maybe lower down the price of bikes, maybe.
Since there's more people on like green transport, like buses, where there's like it's only like a bit amount of gas than like multiple cars producing gas.
Now let's hear from Brendan Mulligan from the Glues campaign. He tells us all the benefits of green light rail transport.
Well, the most obvious one and the most talked about ones nowadays, I suppose, is the emissions. The fact that light rail would have zero emissions because it would be battery-powered, rechargeable batteries powered by renewable energy. So there would be no emissions. So they have been making major contribution to reducing Galway City's emissions. I think the transport sector in Galway City accounts for almost 18% of the emissions. It's ranked third after residential and industry. So any reduction there will make a significant benefit to Galway achieving its target and the government nationally achieving its 51% reduction target by 2030. So that's the first thing to say about that. And then other emissions that people don't talk about that much and maybe have only really been appreciated in very recent years are tyre dust from vehicles, from buses, from cars, has proven to be a major problem for the environment. And it has been tracked and blamed for the death of coho salmon in the USA. There were serious losses of salmon, and when they traced it back, what was killing them? It was tyre dust in the waters, in the rivers and in the ocean. And tyre dust is now a very significant contributor to micropollutants, microplastics in the oceans, which is a major problem. Fish eat the microplastics, we eat the fish, and the microplastics end up in our system as well. So we're kind of poisoning ourselves. But tyre dust is also an important contributor to air pollution. And we're talking about absolutely tiny particles that get into our lungs, and then from our lungs they get into the bloodstream. And the particles are so tiny that they get in, they're able to cross from the bloodstream into our brains. And it's unknown fully exactly how bad that can be for our brains, but it is recognised now in recent years as a very significant health hazard. So that's another one. Improved air quality, not just from the tyre dust, but from the other emissions that you get out of tailpipes and vehicles, you know, diesel engines, petrol engines, whatever, the NOx emissions and all that sort of thing. It improves, it gets away from all of that. Another thing that's been realised in recent years is that the impacts of noise pollution on people's health. It's only been recently recognised, it has a major impact. And light rail, electric light rail, is very silent compared to other transport systems. And that means that, especially in congested areas like in cities and that, it's less disturbance to people, especially at night and when they're trying to get sleep and that sort of thing. And, you know, noise pollution has significant both physical and mental effects on people. So another benefit of light rail in terms of environmental benefits. Increased energy efficiency. Because light rail is steel wheels running on steel tracks, there's almost no rolling resistance. Like on tired vehicles with tires have significant rolling resistance to overcome before they get moving. And as they're moving along, it uses up a lot of the energy that's been burnt in the engine, just getting over the rolling resistance. Very little of that with light rail, so it's very efficient in terms of energy. Probably the only more efficient transport system really is the bicycle, you know. But when it comes to transport, trams are really a winner in terms of energy efficiency. There's no doubt about it.
Is that an advantage of it too, that if you are cycling, you could actually bring your bike onto the light rail
system? Absolutely. We'd like to see an integrated transport system where you could cycle to a stop on the Lewis and either have secure storage there or in some cases bring your bike on onto the tram and then get off at your dwelling. So at your destination. So you'd have be able to go from home to your final destination using both cycling and trams. You know, both very efficient forms of transport, no doubt about it, you know.
How achievable is it, Brendan? Because we know there's a lot of talk of the National Development Plan and the details of the projects won't be announced until Budget Day in October. Can we see a Lewis line for Galway come October?
I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but even if it doesn't come as soon as that, there's a lot of homework to be done to advance Lewis. What we have now since last October is a feasibility study from the National Transport Authority, which says it's both economically feasible and technically feasible. There's no technical constraints. What we need to do now is go back and have a deeper look at the possible routes, the potential routes. And this is something that has been done in Cork. They've looked at the potential routes and they've identified what's called an emerging preferred route. That's the stage we need to get to. We don't need to be in the National Development Plan to get that at stage. The National Development Plan is about big numbers with lots of notes after them. All we need is for the NTA to be given an instruction to get on with doing further route analysis. They'd need a few million for small money, really. But that, so we don't actually, it's not critical that we're in the National Development Plan right now. It'd be lovely to be in it. But let's see, if it's not in it, we're not too worried. The main thing is to get to the next stage and get our homework done so that in 4 or 5 years' time when it's reviewed again, that at that stage we're shovel ready. We've gone through the planning process. We've gone through the public consultation on an emerging preferred route. That's where we want to get to, and that's what's critical. More than it being in the National Development Plan, that's what's critical now, is to get our homework done over the next 4 or 5 years and to be in a position where we're shovel ready.
There's been a lot of talk of congestion in Galway and reports have borne out that it's only going to get worse between now and 2040 as well. East to west in Galway City, is that the optimal and the one we need to be looking at and targeting here in terms of a light rail?
Absolutely, John. The geography of Galway lends itself to that. It's a city that's trapped between the sea and the lake. So it's naturally a rectangular city, you know, a linear city going from east to west, which suits light rail perfectly. But you put one rail, light rail line down through the middle of it, nobody's too far away from it. You know, maybe 40 or 50% of the people are within walking distance of light rail if you do that, living in the city. And all the major centres of employment can be close to it. The hospitals, we have 4 hospitals, 2 universities. We've looked at it and the NTA have looked at it. And, you know, it is obvious that there is a route there through the city that could easily facilitate people and reach a lot of people quite easily. But what we need to do is, for the feasibility study, they looked at a route, but there needs to be a wider study of more potential routes with the objective of getting the preferred route, you know, the most optimal route through the city that meets the needs of most people and is nearest to most people and to where they want to go. So we need to get to that stage.
You mentioned earlier on about integrating with other transport projects. Would it make sense to have other routes going out, other approach roads into Galway and linking in with park and rides?
Absolutely. We need to have a series of park and rides around the periphery. You know, whether they're to be served by bus or Lewis, they're the options. But we would see that, obviously, in Galway, you have to start with one line, the same as in Dublin, they started with one line. So we need to start with one line, and then we see where we can branch off after that to other places. Like, we see, it's critical to us that we would serve Ballybrit and Parkmore business estates, but there's huge numbers of people working up there. So that's a critical. Now, after that, you know, we see there's opportunities to branch maybe to Salt Hill in the future, to branch out the Mycullen Road, for instance, we want to go out as far as Kappa Road initially, and maybe on to Barna then in due course, because the road network from Barna in is never going to be much better than it is now. So we really need to get to Barna. And if you had a park and ride at Barna that could intercept a lot of the car traffic coming in from the west, and they could get on a Lewis, you'd be a winner straight away. So people coming in from Connemara who were working in, say, Boston Scientific could jump on a Lewis there and get across the city in jig time. And the same going home in the evening, no hassle with traffic, and get more cars off the road.
And what would it mean to, I suppose, business people in the city centre here in Galway, Brendan? Because some of them of a certain vintage would remember a rail line, or just about remember a rail line in Galway City.
That's right. There was the tram line that went from Galway out to Salt Hill, horse-drawn. So some people are probably still alive who can remember that. So, I mean, if it was done before, it could be done again. The problem in Galway, people are reluctant to come into Galway to do their shopping because they're afraid of their lives of getting stuck in traffic and losing an hour and a half each way going and coming. So they're going to other centres around. They're going to Ennis, they're going to Athlone, they're going to Castlebar to do their shopping. They're reluctant to come in, especially if they've been in and out of Galway during the week for work. The last thing they want to do at a weekend is get in the car again and face into this horrible traffic congestion to do their shopping or to go for their entertainment. So if we could eliminate a lot of that congestion, Galway would open up then. You get more people coming in, you get more footfall in the streets, more business for the retailers, for the restaurants, you know, for the theatres and all that sort of thing. It would make it an accessible city. It's largely inaccessible at the moment due to traffic congestion, and it is really putting people off in a big way.
Mm. And in terms of the development of the city going forward, in a sustainable way, how important is light rail? Because if I was to use even another infrastructure project as an example, the Galway Port, you could see a lot of benefit for having a system like that when you're seeing a development like that coming down the tracks in the city centre.
Well, obviously, you know, there's a lot of talk now about the Augustine Hill site, Cannes Station, Land Development Authority doing development around the port, at the Dyke Road, etc. There's a lot of plans for housing development within the city centre. So there are more customers to use light rail to get around, to get to their places of employment, etc. So light rail lends itself to more sustainable land use. You get more efficient use of land if you have light rail. And a great example of that is Freiburg in Germany. Freiburg in Germany, its footprint is slightly smaller than Galway's, but it has three times the population on that footprint as Galway has. So that's what light rail can do. They have five light rail lines. All development has happened along those light rail lines. It's very efficient, very compact, and it's a sustainable use of land. What we have here is sprawl. We're sprawling out, using a lot more land than we need to. A lot of the land we're buying for housing, etc., we have to give over a lot of it for parking and for road development. So a lot of that land has been used unnecessarily for transport, whereas a light rail line uses very little land. It doesn't need parking associated with it. People come and go. And so, for instance, Ardon, for instance, there was a local area plan for Galway City from 2018 to 2024 that has now lapsed. I think the target population for Ardon and that was 12,800 people. Lewis believes that with light rail, we could easily achieve a population out there of over 20,000. And that's a real win-win. The same services would have to go in sewers and drainage and telephone lines and power lines and whatever. But if you get 20,000 people instead of 12,800, you know, the cost per head is much lower in terms of the infrastructure. So it's much cheaper to service high-density development with infrastructure than it is if it's sprawl. So this is where light rail can be really beneficial in terms of transport-oriented development. And that's a central plank of the National Planning Framework, is transport-oriented development. The government talks about the five cities needing to develop it at an unprecedented rate. If we're to develop at an unprecedented rate in Galway, we need something transformational to do that. And that's where we see light rail enabling that unprecedented rate of growth. And without it, we won't get there. We won't get to the National Planning Framework target of 122,000 in 2040 without something transformational like light rail. We just won't get there. It won't happen. And if we did have light rail, it would happen. We don't even have to build it. The minute, ultimately we'd have to build it, but the minute that somebody would draw a line on a map and say, this is where light rail is going to be in 2035 or 2040, developers would take an interest. They would start buying up land around that line, and by the time the line would be built and houses would be built along the apartments, they'd all be dovetailed together. You'd have the transport and the development together in the one place without ever turning a sod in the first place. The first thing you have to do is make a commitment that it's going to happen, and then everything else kicks off.
Is it still very much up in the air with that pause in the Galway transport strategy with the ring road?
That's very unfortunate. I mean, they could easily have done two different scenarios, one with a ring road and one without a ring road. But to delay the entire thing while waiting for a decision is just remarkably unfortunate. And it's very damaging to Galway. I don't know why they didn't decide to do two scenarios. It would have been the obvious solution, and then you cover all your bases. Do one scenario with the ring road and see what it looks like. Do one without and see what it looks like. But to pause it makes no sense whatsoever. It's just more time lost for Galway. And again, Galway is falling behind all the time. The West region entirely is falling behind the other regions. And this is just another example of how we fall behind where somebody decides to stall something instead of getting on with it. And it's really remarkably unfortunate.
Brendan Mulligan, a member of the Glues campaign, thanks for joining us on Ars Protect this morning.
Thanks very much, John, for the opportunity.
Time now to hear from the pupils of St Gerald's College in Tuam.
Some examples of green transport solutions are public transport like trains and buses, or walking, cycling or carpooling. In the last Green School Committee, like 2 years ago, I think they had something to do with the bus. They got more like routes with the buses or something, or had them go around the town better so people can get in school easier.
And is there sufficient transport in your area maybe to go into Galway City or further across other counties?
Yeah, there's a bus into Galway in the cathedral, and there's buses to Tuam, buses to Galway from the Prez bus stop as well.
And I know Tuam is a fairly built up area, so it's not that difficult to get public transport. Do you think it's harder for people in rural areas to use sustainable transport?
Yeah, it's definitely harder. Like in Kirfin, there's only one bus stop to get into Galway, and it's only on one side, and you have to walk through the entire parish to get to it. Like.
Do you use any green transport?
I take the bus to and from school every day, and I cycle to shops if I need any food.
That's all for this week's episode of Ars Protect with me, John Morley. Join us on the final Thursday of August, where our topic will be sustainability. Ars Protect is brought to you by Galway Bay FM, IBI, with funding from Commission na mBan with the television licence fee.
Ars Protect, brought to you by Galway Bay FM, the IBI, and funded by Commission na mBan with the television licence fee. Check out arsprotect.ie for more info.